he has this analogy of two mice falling into a bucket of milk, and there's two things that happen. One mouse just gets tired, gives up, drowns. The other mouse continues to work until that milk turns into butter and the mouse walks out. That's really my core ethos, is just when the water gets choppy, just kick harder.
Hi, welcome to Path to Growth. I'm Tracy Young, co-founder and CEO of Tiger Eye. Today, we are joined by Will Allred, co-founder and COO of Lavender.ai. Will, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
So to start, tell me about growing up. Tell me about what you learned from mom and dad.
It's a good question. So grew up in, I feel like this is more common than ever, a household of split parents, but parents who nonetheless were still more than friendly and spend time with both throughout my childhood. My mom, Big Four consulting her whole career, and my dad, corporate M&A law. So two folks that I've learned a ton from when it comes to the things that I do at work and lessons of really hard work. I joke that like my dad still works harder than me, approaching retirement at this point.
Yeah, my parents were that way too. They were working like they couldn't pay next month's rent. It's like, you guys have been doing a really good job saving and bringing yourselves into the middle class in the last 40 years. Like, you can take a break. Anyways, tell me about Lavender and why this problem is important to you.
It's interesting. Lavender came about in the midst of a COVID pivot. So my co-founder, Sinai, I met Will, my other co-founder, at a hackathon in Atlanta back in 2018. The idea was a MarTech startup focused on personalizing digital experiences around psychological preferences of the person on the other end, right? So like introverts versus extroverts. An introvert might prefer cooler, bluer hues, whereas an extrovert might like brighter colors and more people making direct eye contact and photographs. We worked on that problem for 2 years alongside my other co-founder, Casey. And yeah, in that, brought on some amazing customers like Yamaha, Gravity Blankets. Most of our revenue, though, is coming from the world of co-working. Folks wanted to engage with their members aligned with like their own personality traits. COVID rolls around, not many people are going to co-working spaces. And so we had 45 days of runway and had to figure out what was next. And yeah, it was fortunate we were all up in New York City together at the time, brainstorming, and came up with this concept for Lavender. We saw communication moving really strongly into a digital format, and we had a lot of the building blocks in place to help people communicate more effectively and more thoughtfully. And so that's really how we came about. Now, as we've continued to build in that arena, we've built this massive intelligence layer on email, really the lens of what buyers prefer. This lens of psychology is how we're always applying it. And so we're really establishing this system of record for email-based communication. And that comes to life today through a copilot that folks use as they're writing sales emails. So we've found the most success and the most opportunity to help folks in the workspace, particularly in cold prospecting, cold outbound.
From a business perspective, what's your hardest problems today and how are you tackling those?
From a business perspective, I would say the hardest things always boil down to making sure you have the product experience correctly and then communicating that externally as well as possible. So I look at, the core challenges that we face as more around reinforcing the value that we drive for folks. And so, I've gotten super hands-on within our go-to-market org to understand how we're delivering that value, how we're talking about that value with teams. I would say that's like the big challenge that's taking up my mental energy.
When you're recruiting teammates, what are the characteristics that you look for? And what's the type of culture that you guys are trying to build over at Lavender.ai?
We're a really lean team. I don't think most folks realize that. I think the social media brand that we've been able to, fortunately, create gives us a larger persona than what we actually are. But at the same time, we've been able to scale really fast with few hats thanks to our PLG roots. And so with a lean team, one of the pretty much the thing that you have to look for in people is a sense for agency. So yeah, you think about having 15 people serving over 35,000 monthly active users, like you have to be somebody who sees problems, takes them on, and is really only bringing it to the fold when there's blockers or challenges and is sharing outcomes on the other side. I've found that is probably the most important thing in like working with folks for the long term. The other things would be obvious, making sure they take feedback well. And then I'd probably say like on the, not necessarily third as far as most important, but on another level is just, we're nice people. And so, but nobody really wants to work with people that aren't nice people. And so we take that to heart in understanding people's core motivations, as well as just a general sense of, we refer to it internally as give back mentality. And it's something we actually screen for when we interview.
So what are the questions you ask, or how do you look for that when, as you're screening for those characteristics?
Yeah, so every conversation could be different, right? But we're looking for examples where folks unasked, unprovoked, are showcasing that agency, showcasing their ability to solve problems, but also showcasing a desire to give or be curious and learn without the expectation of something on the other end, an intrinsic motivation that's hard to come by.
As COO, what are your most important responsibilities that you have to the team and the company?
Yeah, COO is a funny title, right? Especially like a 15-person company. So it's interesting. In a lot of ways, I'm the world's worst COO because I'm not really a COO. It's in title only, where Elliot on our team manages and hosts all things operations, where my focus is really all things go to market. And so core responsibilities falls under leading the sales team, helping make sure our customers have success. And you know, I post on like social media and stuff. That's our biggest core source of marketing growth.
So you're basically CRO, CMO, and everything in between.
It's a I guess so.
Some of our TigerEye teammates really loved your old claymation wizard on the website. Can you tell us where that idea came from and will you ever bring it back?
So shout out to my co-founder, Will. So if you think about the Lavender brand and a lot of the marketing that we do, yeah, there's this like smart, almost consultative side to it that would be yours truly. The fun, wacky, off the wall things, that's my co-founder. He is brilliant with that kind of stuff, where he just looks at a website and he was like, what if we just did a claymation thing? I haven't seen claymation forever. It's like a company core value at this point, where anytime we see like a zig of like everyone's following a similar path, we try to zag and do something fundamentally different. Obviously, we assess that through the lens of, is that just the right way to approach things? But one of the things we found is just every time we carve our own path in how we do things, the results are way better than if we try to replicate something that was done at Salesforce like 10 years ago.
Of course. And I think in the business that we are in, it's all about trying to get eyeballs and attention. And I think that creativity is, it's an advantage.
Oh, 100%. If you think about startups, marketing, you're screaming for attention. And so, yeah, the louder you can be, the more eyeballs, and then you just have to go deliver on that awareness and that branding. The challenge I see with a lot of small companies is they don't necessarily think big enough when it comes to that. They are either like too worried about, I was guilty of this, like when we first started posting to social media, like I didn't want to go too out there. I was honestly cringing at the concept of even writing on social. And so the reality though is like, if you don't, you'll just fade into the background and will forever struggle to break out.
Especially in today's times where everyone seems to be glued to social media. So what's your favorite time of day to post to social?
I know a lot of people that post to social and they've got like social posting calendars and they write all their posts in advance. I'm not that person. I literally write a post every morning and I'll just make a cup of coffee, sit there and write it. Sometimes to like the detriment of family and life happening around me where I'm like, oh, let me just finish this thought. But it's my way of keeping it A, just like topical to what's top of mind for me, almost journaling in a lot of ways. But B, it allows me to keep my voice as a part of it. Anytime I've tried to like schedule anything, it just all of a sudden starts getting more and more canned and like stops getting the same level of resonance. And so it's something that I've kept with over 4.5 years now, which is wild.
So mornings are your favorite time to post?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I post in the middle of the day. Sometimes I post in the afternoon. Life happens, right? Go to a doctor's appointment. I'm not going to be like sitting in the waiting room writing a LinkedIn post, but that's the preferred time.
And what's your favorite channel?
LinkedIn, for sure. For content, for sure. Just because of what it's done for my career as well as for the company. I will say more recently, I've started to lean into Twitter X, whatever you want to call it. There's a seemingly growing like sales community there. I'm starting to see like some of our customers pop up and like comments on posts that I do there. And I use it almost like a drafting board where thought pops in my head in between meetings. I'll just like ship it as a tweet and then move on. And if it does well, then I can just repurpose it for LinkedIn.
Now, do we still say tweet? We do. It's just been too long. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, there's no better word for it is what I've come back with. Like a post. Yeah. It's just lame.
Do you remember the pandemic? What memories do you have from 2020?
I spent a lot of time in front of my computer screen, that's for sure. I also had a lot more hair then. I always see like some funny pictures, like the COVID grow out where I look like a hockey player. I actually got a DM in the middle of community meetup. It was Thursday night sales. Shout out Amy Bolas, who's the best. I got a DM from somebody being like, dude, do you play hockey? Question mark. Just like random person. And I was like, maybe it's too long. It might be time to get a haircut.
Yeah.
I had a good time with COVID. As good of a time as you can have in a pandemic. Yeah. My wife and I moved down to St. Petersburg, Florida for 6 months. Stayed on the beach for a winter. Got to spend time close to family doing that. What about yourself?
Yeah, I bunkered down with my family. And we didn't see anyone, but we had a nice little community going. And I had just had my second kid. So got to spend a ton of time with him.
Congrats. How old now?
Four years since the pandemic. So he's four now. It was crazy. My husband had to wear a mask. Actually, we weren't even sure if he was going to be able to go to the hospital to help me deliver. Because at the time, we needed to protect the nurses and make sure that we didn't get them sick. So every extra person was just extra risk for them. But I think my biggest lesson is, man, boy, is it nice to just be back in society and how grateful I am to be in the world and be able to buy groceries without feeling scared.
Yeah.
What about you? What's one lesson you learned from the pandemic?
I think one of the lessons that I learned is there's infinite amounts of value in building community through work. And so I think about the time in which we like got into posting to LinkedIn, the communities that we joined, all the people that we met. The reality is like post-COVID, quote unquote, that hasn't really changed all that much, RTO, whatever. Like you still get an event together, you get people in person. There's just a level at which people open up, share stories, talk about problems that they're having, talk about solutions that they're using, working, not working, that you just can't get in any other format.
Based on your experience, what advice would you give founders starting out? Or advice you'd give, you know, yourself at the start of this journey?
Focus on closing deals. Every problem is solved by closing more deals.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban had a revenue cures all, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like I find particularly early stage founders get too wrapped up and the product doesn't do this or that. And it's like, sure, but that's like a requirement that you should totally build towards. But there's probably 10,000 other folks that don't have that requirement that you're just not selling to, and you're pausing as a byproduct of getting some small little piece of feedback. So the amount of prospecting that I would tell myself to do in the early days would be like just 10x whatever you were doing, because it just pays off in dividends down the road.
Laser focus on sales.
100%.
Trust in leaders can be made or broken when things get tough. How do you deal with a crisis?
Have you ever watched the movie, it shows up on TV all the time, Catch Me If You Can?
No, I've never seen it. I've seen the previews,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's got like Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. It's pretty star-studded. It's a good one. You should watch it.
Tom Hanks, right?
What's that?
Is it Tom Hanks, isn't it too?
Yeah. Wow. So okay. Tom Hanks is like chasing down Leo. But there's this quote from Leo's dad in the movie where he talks about, he has this analogy of two mice falling into a bucket of milk. And there's two things that happen. One mouse just gets tired, gives up, drowns. The other mouse continues to work until that milk turns into butter and the mouse walks out. That's really my core ethos, is just, you know, when the water gets choppy, just kick harder. That's been 100% of my career and how I look at problems. It's, if I can't outsmart it, then I need to outwork it.
There's this wonderful quote by Winston Churchill that says that if you find yourself in hell, keep walking. You might just find yourself out of it if you just don't stay there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a quote after my own heart that I did. This was like post-grad. My dad and I went to London together, went to the Churchill Museum, spent a bunch of time like geeking out on that stuff. So there's a great new documentary on Netflix about Churchill and his life, by the way.
I quite liked the Gary Oldman rendition of Winston Churchill.
I don't know if I know that one.
Won an award for it. It was great. It was, anyways, highly recommend. I just cannot remember the name for the life of me right now.
I feel like that's like my life in a nutshell, where people be like, do you know so-and-so? And I totally do. And I'm like, I don't know names. I know faces. I don't know names. That's just like a tragic flaw of who I am.
Our Stuart's coming through. I got it in chat. The Darkest Hour. That's the film name. Thank you, Stuart.
Sounds uplifting.
Good holiday film. Tell us about one person who helped you become the leader you are today.
There's so many.
Tell us about two.
I'll come back to like super early in my career, like take it phase by phase. So a guy by the name of Tory Durden, when I was working at a company called Health Grades, I was struggling with some things internally, like politics wise. And yeah, he was always there to talk me through how to manage the like internal politics, how to like really coach me up and dug in and cared when in reality had no reason to in any way, shape or form. Wasn't in his job description. He was just a really nice guy. And I feel like I took a lot from that in caring about the full person as well as like the development of the people around you. Then moving into consulting afterwards, I think about Dave Sutton, who was the CEO of the firm. We got to work like directly with him, like specifically on like internal projects and client work. And the way that guy optimized his day and how productive he was, like, I've never seen anything like it. To the point now where it's like, I now do a lot of the things that he did in how he managed his time and stuff. And it's just been an absolute unlock for me and like how I'm able to get stuff done. And then last but certainly not least would be Amy Volus, more recently, dear friend, but someone who's been a really helpful person in holding me accountable and making sure I don't lose sight of the need for being thoughtful, the need for not just being thoughtful in the sense of, yeah, saying X and being thoughtful, but being proactive and like following up with folks and making sure that I really nurture the relationships that super fortunate to be able to even have because of this role. That's something that she does better than anyone that I know. And I don't even know if she knows how much I value that from her.
Yeah. Isn't it incredible? It's so beautiful that these mentors in your life, they probably don't even know unless you told them how much that you've learned from them and took away from them.
I try to tell folks. Like I was quick to set a meeting with like my old boss, Dave, to like make sure he heard that feedback from me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's so hard in the day-to-day of it all, right?
Yeah. Do share some tips. So I think it was Dave who was, you mentioned, was great at optimizing a day and being incredibly productive. Yeah. Give us some tips here.
Yeah. One is plan everything in your calendar. Whenever I'm finding myself less than productive, it's because my calendar's not blocked out to a T on what I need to be doing when and how I need to be doing it. What you find is when you first start doing it, you're really bad at estimating how long each thing takes. But as you continue to do it and get things wrong, just like an AI model, right? Everybody's favorite word these days. You start to pick up on the trends of that takes me a little longer than usual, or like those types of things. And you start to become much more realistic with what you can accomplish. You're able to communicate much more effectively on like when things are going to get done. And so one thing that I really try to do, and I encourage other folks to do it on my team when they need something from me, is find an open block in my calendar and just put a task, like just be like, go do this during this time, which is, yeah, seems silly, but at the same time, it is so helpful for getting.
Yeah, I love it. It's like a reminder. It's not just for meetings. Now you've also got things you owe people and things you've got to do, and your tasks are embedded into your calendar.
Yeah. The second and the third things, the second thing would be the frameworks that he applies to problems. So this obviously takes time to learn, but you start to realize that there's communication patterns, there's things in how you structure either slide decks or presentations or even emails that are going to repeat themselves over and over again. And it helps your brain understand, even like writing a blog post. I was always baffled. This guy could write a blog post in an hour. And I'm like, what? He's like, I don't know. It's just not that hard. Give me two per week. I was literally writing like two blogs per week for the guy. I was like dumbfounded that he was like, yeah, that shouldn't be a hard task. And I realized what he was doing was he already knew the fundamental idea that he wanted to get across, and I knew how he would structure it out. And then as soon as I figured that out, I was like, okay, now I can build my own process for how I do those kinds of things. And that's just something that I've regimented and like how I think through problems now is, okay, what is the frame? Okay, what am I trying to get out of this? How do I make sure this is easily comprehensible to the other person on the other side? And structuring it that way makes it much easier than this nebulous task in front of you of go do X. And then the last one is be crazy good at working on your phone. And so it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if I'm waiting in the waiting room at a doctor's office, like checking email, checking Slack. Like I should be able to, particularly with like how much phones have advanced these days, like I should be able to do anything that I can do in front of my computer just as well, just as quickly in front of my phone.
As a mobile software developer, I totally get that. I live off this thing. We build off of this thing. We just believe that you should be able to do everything from here. It's the same as on your desktop.
I totally agree.
What should folks early in their career be doing more or less of?
They should be saying yes more, and they should be setting expectations, probably better. So it's easy to say yes to everything, and you should. I think the place where folks get caught up in that is they forget to set expectations as they're saying yes, and then they let people down or they don't meet expectations. That'd be like the big one, too. The other is just, and I can't hammer this home enough, act with urgency. Yeah, the reality is like the faster you do something, like the more responsive you are, like the better the feedback loop is overall.
either the faster you fail or the faster you succeed, or at least you're getting some feedback in between and learning and growing.
Yeah, totally. I think about a rule my co-founder told me he uses, which is the 2 or the 5 minute rule. It's like an arbitrary number, but if somebody asks you to do something, you know it'll take you less than 2 minutes. You're already in the moment of like context switching anyways, just go get it done. That's where that urgency comes into play, where you're like, yeah, you see a response come back from a client or XYZ needs to happen. And you're just like, okay, let me just do that real quick. You can easily stack those things up and get 10x done compared to your peers who see that task, linger on it. And I don't know, I think about a lot of like, anytime I've ever felt anxiety at work, it's because I'm not taking action. And I find that's also probably not like good therapy advice, but like been helpful for me anyways.
Yeah, I find that when things are stagnated and it's just there's no progress, that's when I feel the most overwhelmed. But as long as there's movement somewhere, it feels good.
Yep. Like a shark. You just got to keep water running over the gills.
Yeah. It's funny that you mention just taking action as it's coming and coming at you. Something I advise founders who are doing sales for the first time is to cut the sales cycle shorter at every stage and every step. So if someone tells you to call them next month, you call them in 3 weeks. If someone says, yeah, email me next week, you email them on a Monday, not a Friday. And I think that actually can be expanded to everything else in life and the things you do, that if you can shave off an hour here or a day here, eventually it adds up to years of productivity.
Yeah. To piggyback on that advice, I would tell people always push for the close. Anytime you see they were like on board with it, right? They trust whatever it is you're talking about. Like they're excited about it. They want to move forward. Don't wait for them to do it. Just push for it, because all of the objection handling training in the world, all the medic qualification, all these things, you don't get those pieces of information until you go for the close. And then that's when you find people are going to respond back and be like, actually, we need to loop in so-and-so. Or we got to go through our procurement process. And then you can ask about the procurement process, but you'll find what the objection is once you start pushing for that close.
Okay, so for those of the listeners who don't know what Will's talking about, pushing for a close, I'll give you a soundbite and then you can give me a soundbite. It's, what other information do you need from me to make a decision? Give us another example.
Yeah, it sounds like you're excited. I can shoot over a PO and we can get you started next month. Who do I need to send that over to? Just mid-conversation, like, you know, they're excited, you're excited. What am I missing? That's what you need to go for.
Or they say, oh, this is great, this is amazing. And then at which point you respond with, great, can you sign today?
Yeah, literally. Yeah. The flip side of that would be, I find a lot of founders in the early stages, they say yes to a lot of deals. And my co-founder is really good at reminding me on this, which is, you can't service everybody all at once. So like sometimes you're just going to have to put some people on the back burner and disqualify them. That to me can come to life in the sense of, okay, like this might not be the best fit for you right now. This just, we don't do these core things that seem really important to you. Because what you'll find is people will be like, no, we still need these things. Or you'll find that there's some core integration that you just have to have or something like that, that, you know, they really want. You're not going to be able to offer it to them right away. And so trying to fit a square into a round hole is not going to help you.
It's true. One of our most important jobs, and as founders, I feel like all of us are in sales, is to really protect our time. And part of protecting that time is to disqualify the people who are just not right, the prospects who are going to waste your time.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been so great talking to you. Can you give some parting advice for our listeners? What's advice you'd give yourself like 10 years ago?
Always be prospecting. that to a T would be like the advice I'd give myself 10 years ago, 5 years ago, yesterday. If I'm wondering like, what am I doing? Hey, you're probably not prospecting enough.
Yeah. Keep building pipeline.
Yeah.
It was great talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and so many nuggets of wisdom.
Wow. Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.